on this episode of China Unscripted, a look inside Chinese concentration camps, an unimaginable climate of fear, and how the Chinese Communist Party is worse than the Taliban.
And ISIS.
And Slobodan Milosevic.
And Hitler.
And the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, all those things.
It wasn't us who said this.
Hi, welcome to China Unscripted. I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelley Zhang.
And I'm Matt Ganesda.
And today we are once again drinking tea from our sponsor, Path of Cha. Today's tea, now this isn't actually an unusual tea that I've never had. It's a black tea with jasmine. So this is actually called award-winning jasmine jinya black tea. So jasmine is usually added to like a green tea. So I have no idea what it's going to taste like with a black tea. So let's smell. I definitely smell the jasmine. This is total ASMR right now.
Wow.
Don't roll your eyes at me, Shelley. People like ASMR.
That's not what I was rolling my eyes at.
What were you rolling your eyes at?
The slurping. Which is not very ASMR.
No?
I have to say no.
All right. Well, anyways, actually, I like this tea. I mean, definitely the first note is the jasmine flavor that you get with any kind of jasmine tea. But then at the back of it, you get sort of this dark, rich flavor that you typically get with a black tea.
Yeah, it's not as jasmine like as green tea.
Yeah, it's a little heavier than a jasmine green tea. But yeah, I'm surprised. I have never had a tea like this. This is pretty nice. What do you think, Matt?
It's good. So Chris, let's say viewers wanted to try a sample of this tea.
Well, then they should buy it from Path of Cha using our special promo code, which is go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. So have a cup on us, on you.
To support the show, yes.
Wow, it's almost like you guys didn't practice that at all.
No, actually, what's sad is that was the result of 5 hours of practice.
No, show, this is China Unscripted. We're not allowed to practice.
That's right. I don't even know who we're talking to today or what we're talking about. So let's get the ball rolling.
It's going to be really fun. You'll really enjoy this one, Chris.
Why do you say that?
You're just going to be talking about really happy things, like pandas.
I hate pandas. Okay, let's begin the interview. Joining us today is Dr. Olsi Jezeji. He's a Canadian.
You
know, no, you said it correct. Yes, it was good.
Yeah, you got it wrong, man.
He got it wrong. He was right.
Boom.
I guess we better start that again.
No, we're keeping this. Sorry. Joining us today is Dr. Olsi Jezeji. He's a Canadian-Albanian historian specializing in the history of Islam, and he's also an independent journalist. So thank you for joining us today.
Welcome.
All right. So you were a part of a select group of people who were invited to Xinjiang by the Chinese government. Why were you selected?
Well, I heard so many stories about the situation of Muslims in China, and as a professional historian that I am, I usually want to check the things myself firsthand. So for this reason, I approached the Chinese embassy in Tirana, Albania. I told them that I've heard so many stories about the Uyghur Muslims, and I told them that I was suspecting that these were fake stories.
Oh, so you didn't believe that about the persecution of the Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang?
Well, I mean, I'm a bit skeptic because, I mean, I deal a lot with the issue of radicalization of Muslims. Mm-hmm. And I saw, I mean, what Libya and in Syria before of that, and how many people were manipulated and joined radical groups. So my suspicion was that, I mean, in the case of China, probably we had some kind of second Syrian scenario. So for this reason, I approached the Chinese embassy in Tirana in July 2019. I showed them my resume, and I told them that I'm interested to go myself in Xinjiang and to check myself what is going on with the situation of Muslims in China. The Chinese embassy in Tirana, they liked my resume, and they invited me in early August to join a team of foreign journalists who were going to visit Xinjiang and were going to find out themselves what is going on there.
Where were some of the other reporters from?
The other reporters were from countries like Russia, Mongolia, Kazakhstan, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Afghanistan. So I was the only European of this group.
Okay. So it seemed like they were making an effort to reach out to Muslim countries.
To Muslim countries and the Central Asian countries.
You were the only European represented. There wasn't any reporters from like the United States or the UK, Germany, France.
No, I was the only one. We had also another guy who was from the Czech Republic.
Okay. And so this is interesting. You were kind of going into the situation with a general understanding, very similar to what the Chinese Communist Party says about Xinjiang, that they have a problem with radical Islam in Xinjiang and so are taking steps by building these what they call vocational training centers to sort of, what's the word they use, de-extremize? Like it's some weird...
De-extremification?
Yeah, it's some weird nonsense word. So that's kind of how you were approaching this at first, right?
I had no idea what was going on there. And I wanted to check myself what is going on. I had read so many stories, but I wanted myself to investigate everything, you know. And when you are from the outside of a country, sometimes the way how you get certain stories, they are not right. So I wanted to go and check my... I wanted to check the story of the so-called concentration camps. Mm-hmm. I wanted to check the situation of the Muslim community there, its freedoms and other stuff. And moreover, since, China pretends to be a socialist country, I had this good impression based on my Marxist readings that the Chinese should really be a Marxist and... according to Marx, proletarians have no nation. And I never imagined that in China I would find the racism and the discrimination against other ethnic groups that I found there. This was a great shock for me. The expectations when I went there were different. I wanted actually to challenge the Western narrative about China because I never thought that the Chinese would be so crazy and to treat the people in the way they were treating them.
So it sounds like you saw some pretty interesting things there. I just want to just wonder, at any point before you went, were you concerned that what the Chinese government might show you might not be the reality? Like they might try and...
Oh, yes. I had this kind of... Because I have visited many countries in Asia and Africa where governments... try to give their own version, their own narrative of the reality. So I've been to, let us say, countries like Algeria, Russia, Saudi Arabia, what have you. And since I come from an ex-communist country, I grew up under a kind of Chinese-style communism that we had here in Albania. So, I was expecting to find some kind of government propaganda in our paid trip. But I didn't expect to find such a kind of show that we found when we were there.
Well, so tell us, what happened when you got there? What was the show and what did you discover was the real situation?
Yes, okay, so I landed in Xinjiang, in Urumqi, the capital of Xinjiang, on August 16. The Chinese received us with a foreign delegation. We received the first class treatment. They took us from the airport. They sent us to a hotel in Urumqi. And the hotel was a 5-star hotel. we had the Communist Party apparatchiks who received us, and they were showing to us the great achievements that China is doing. And Urumqi was quite an impressive city. It was very developed. So, I mean, in the first 2 days that we were in Urumqi, things looked really nice. You could see progress. You could see the Communist Party developing Urumqi, turning it probably into a second Beijing or whatever. So, I mean, at first we didn't understand much. But what happened was that after we settled down during our visit, we met other foreign journalists who were in our delegation. And then, I mean, when I went to Xinjiang, I was expecting to see Uyghur Muslims coming and meeting us. But our first surprise was that we didn't see any Uyghur Muslims. We saw only Han Chinese. And moreover, they were Communist Party officials.
So that was kind of the first red flag.
That was the first red flag. And for me, coming from next Maoist Stalinist country like Albania was, I had a kind of deja vu because I saw even the way how they were dressing and how they were behaving. So they were exactly like the Communist apparatchiks that we had in Albania during Enver Hoxha. In a way, it was a good nostalgia because it was a reminder for me of my days when I was young and we had the communists running the country. But the thing that impressed me first was that I didn't see Uyghurs. I didn't see Turkic Muslims in this Uyghur autonomous region, but everywhere where I was going, I was seeing Chinese communist officials guiding us through the city. We had a VIP treatment wherever we were going. The police and the army and the communist officials were at our service. So, I mean, the treatment was great, but I understood that, something is going on in here. And then what happened in the second and third day, we had a number of Communist Party officials who started to deliver us lectures on the history of Xinjiang. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, apart from being a journalist, I'm also a historian. So I dealt a lot with the issue of Islamophobia. I dealt a lot with the issue of Orientalism, racism, anti-Muslim hatred, and the way how secular state uses history in order to shape its imagined communities. During the lectures that we had in Xinjiang, I was really shocked when I heard the historical presentations that we had from Chinese historians and communist officials like Xu Guixiang and Ma Pinyan. These people, they deliver to us the white papers that the government of China has issued about Xinjiang. But in these lectures, I noticed that there was a very high spirit of racism and Islamophobia towards the Uyghurs and Muslims. So in the white papers that were presented to us, the Chinese officials told us that Xinjiang or East Turkestan has historically been Han Chinese.
Really?
That the Uyghurs are immigrants in this region, that Islam is a violent and a foreign religion, which was imposed by the Turks and the Arabs. And Islam was depicted as a kind of a primitive religion coming from a less civilized people. While the whole tendency of the lectures that we had was that this region has been Han Chinese and that this region always belonged to China and that the Uyghurs, who are the natives of Uyghuristan, how some people call Turkestan, were primitive people. And then after receiving these lectures, and during the lectures, I made even a number of debates with these communist historians, because during their lectures, they were telling us, we do not want here Islam as it is being practiced in Turkey and in Arab countries.
I'm just curious, like, they're saying this to a room full of journalists, many of them from Muslim countries. How were people taking this?
Well, people didn't like it. I had a Turkish journalist with me who, I mean, all the time we were complaining about the narrative that the Chinese were giving to us, because after all, Xinjiang is the home of the Altai Mountains. And people who know Turkic history, they know that the Turkic people, from the Tatars to the Turks and all these other Turkish nations, they came from Altai Mountains and all Syria, all that. But the Chinese were telling us, no, there were no Turks in here. There were only Han Chinese. So the number one problem that we had was that, number one, they were delivering to us a historical thesis. I mean, they were refusing the facts. They were trying to show the whole history of Xinjiang as being Han Chinese, which was a major lie. Second thing was that they were depicting these people, the natives of Xinjiang, the Uyghurs and others, as being immigrants. And this was really shocking for us, because, I mean, we expect to find this kind of racist language from people like Le Pen in France, or Wilders in Holland, but we didn't expect to find such a presentation from a country that pretends to be a socialist country, a country that has so many ethnic groups on it. But the historical narrative that we got was an imperialist narrative. And during our lectures, we debated a lot, not only me, I had a Turkish friend as well, but even the Arabs who were with us, they were not happy. And I mean, we often were asking the Chinese officials, how come you speak in such a way? How come you treat your own people, who are the Uyghurs and other Muslims, as being migrants? And on the other hand, they were telling to us what China intends to do with these people. During the lectures, they told us that we don't want here to have mosques that look like Islamic mosques. So their whole theory is that we have to erase the minarets and the domes, and we have to shape these mosques as Chinese temples. Number two was that they were telling to us that the Uyghurs, before becoming Muslims, they were Buddhist. And the narrative was that since they were Buddhist and Islam is a foreign religion, these people have to go back to Buddhism.
Which is a foreign religion in China anyway.
Yes, but which one is foreign religion?
Buddhism.
I mean, it came from India, right?
And the narrative that we got was a similar narrative that we heard in Europe during Second World War from Hitler about his stupid ideology of the Aryan race and the foreigners who were the Jews, the Slavs, and what have you.
Oh my God.
We had the same kind of parallel, and we were really shocked to ourselves, seriously, we are listening the same kind of narrative that, moreover for me, coming from Albania, the Balkans, we heard this kind of narrative from Serbian extremist people like Slobodan Milosevic, Ratko Mladic, and Radovan Karadzic, during the war in Bosnia and Kosovo, or we hear this kind of narrative sometimes from Catholic fundamentalists here in the Balkans. But these theories nowadays have been discredited, condemned, and they are very harmful to the peaceful coexistence of nations. And during our debates, I told to our Chinese officials, I told them, my God, I mean, I told them, you are talking like you are living in the 19th century. These theories that you are speaking, I told to them, they belong to the past. These are 19th century's stupid, discredited theories that you are talking. And I told them you should adapt multiculturalism here. You should accept diversity. You should accept other ethnic groups who live in China. And moreover, a thing that we noticed even when we visited the museums of Xinjiang, of Urumqi, of Aksu and Kashgar, in the museums, the way how the Chinese in the history of Xinjiang was the history of the ruling classes, of the bourgeoisie, of the imperial China. So they were showing the history of Xinjiang as being the history of the Ming dynasty, of the Qing dynasty, and what have you. And this was very shocking, especially for professional historians like I am, because, and I told to our Chinese friends, I told them, with the communist revolution of Mao Zedong, you removed the ruling imperial families who were ruling China, and you established a socialist country, a country of workers, where everybody is equal. But unfortunately, I told them, the way how you are depicting the history, it is not a communist way, but it is a bourgeoisie way. So, I mean, you claim to be Marxist, but you are not Marxist, you are imperialist. And this was something that shocked us when it came to the historical presentations that we received during our trip before visiting the concentration camps.
Well, hold on. How did they respond to being called not Marxist, but bourgeoisie?
Or imperialists.
Well, they didn't like it. But, I mean, they had to respect us because, I mean, we were foreign guests. And I presume they never thought that they will have the trouble that they had with me after I left China. They didn't like it. And I was telling to them, please, to the translators that we had, and the communist apparatchiks, take note of what I'm telling to you and tell this thing to your bosses in Beijing. Because, I mean, what you are doing is anti-Chinese, because after all, the Uyghurs, the Kazakhs, and the Hui Muslims and other people of China, they are all citizens of China. So by discriminating people who are not Han Chinese, in fact, you are doing the same historical mistake that Slobodan Milosevic did in Bosnia when he wanted to create an all-Serbian Yugoslavia by discriminating other ethnic groups. So I told them, first of all, you have to learn from history, and you have to learn from the history of the British Empire and from their multiculturalism and tolerance. You are destroying China, I told them, with what you are doing and the way how you are depicting history. Because we have to understand something here. The problem that China has in Muslims is multidimensional. It is imperialist, it is economic, but it comes even from the hatred that the official historical narrative of China has against minorities. So, I mean, if I would compare the present historical mindset of the Beijing leadership today, I would, without reservation, say that these are a kind of Ku Klux Klan ruling Beijing, like you had the Ku Klux Klan in America many decades ago, which was talking about the superiority of the white race and white America and other stupid things. The same kind of ideology is being transmitted from state institutions in China, from established historian and historical schools, from schools, universities, and museums. And it is this kind of Han Chinese superiority over the other people that has led to the crisis in which Xinjiang is at present, whereby the Chinese authorities are trying to eradicate the Uyghurs and other Turkic people and forcefully convert them into Han Chinese.
So it doesn't sound like this trip started out on the right foot.
Yes, probably because maybe I was the virus of this trip, and the Chinese told me also, how come we, before you had eight other journalist delegations, and nothing happened with them like is happening with you. I told them, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm a problematic person. I quarrel with everybody. But I have to tell you, where is your problem? Because being a professional historian, apart from being a journalist, is to understand and investigate the problems that certain political systems have.
So after this, you did go to what the Chinese government calls vocational training camps. Can you tell us a bit about those vocational training camps? Because a lot of people say they're actually concentration camps.
Yes, this was the final breaking point with us. Because for as long as we in Urumqi, and we were having these historical debates with the Chinese about the way how they depict and understand the history of China, even me myself, as a devout Muslim that I am, I was trying in a way to justify the Chinese and to say, okay, we have such stupid and racist throughout the world. We have state Islamophobia in many countries of the world. So in general, I was keeping my nerve under control. But what happened in the third day, the Chinese sent us to Aksu. The names of the cities in Xinjiang, they are all Turkic or Mongolian. Urumqi means grassland. Aksu means white water, etc. So when they sent us to Aksu on the third day, they told us, we are going to send you to the vocational training centers. Because apart from the historical lectures, the Chinese told us that in China, in Xinjiang, the authorities were suffering from radical Islam and terrorism, which were, of course, their narrative was very simplistic. They ignored the suffering of the Uyghurs and so on. But when they sent us to Aksu on the third day, they sent us to Wenxi County Vocational Training Center. They put us into buses and they drove us into desert for around 1 hour. And finally, we ended up at this so-called vocational training center, which in fact was an Alcatraz, was a prison in the middle of a desert. But the Chinese, who were very worried about what we from the outside world speak about it, they had shaped this prison or concentration camp in a way to look like a school. So they sent us to this so-called school in the middle of a desert, and they had trained a group of prisoners to behave like students. So when we went there, they put us inside this prison. The windows were all, closed with irons and what have you. And they presented us with a group of boys and girls who, as soon as we entered there, they started singing and dancing.
So the when you approached this vocational training center, you said the windows had iron bars. Were there fences with barbed wire, this sort of thing?
No, they had removed fences, but of course they had high walls and they had guards, but they were all in civilian clothing. So we didn't see any weapon because they had hidden everything. And the people who were presented to us, they are trained prisoners who have been presented even to BBC, even to Sky News, and to all Western media outlets who have gone to check what is going on in these concentration camps.
I saw on your YouTube channel that there was a video of Uyghurs that looked like they were in a classroom in Uyghur costumes, and they were singing and dancing. One of the songs they were singing was actually in Mandarin.
Yes. I mean, what the Chinese authorities are doing with these vocational training centers is that they're picking up Uyghurs from their homes and villages and towns and wherever they live. And they take them and send them to these concentration camps. Now, in China, the Uyghurs are, because, I mean, we have to know the history of Xinjiang. In 2009, we had a major revolt, and the Uyghurs had their own state, Second World War, and the Chinese are treating East Turkestan or Xinjiang as an occupied colony. When you go there, you understand that this is not normal China. You see soldiers, police everywhere, and China is treating Xinjiang like United States treated Afghanistan when they invaded in time of George Bush. It's almost the same situation.
Except I see there's a lot of surveillance cameras as well.
Yes, everywhere you had surveillance from the time you enter in the airport, everywhere. I mean, the Chinese dictatorship is ruling, Xinjiang with a high-tech technology, because I was trying to compare the when I was there, I was trying to compare the dictatorship that we had in Albania during time of Enver Hoxha with the Chinese, and it cannot be compared, because our dictatorships in Eastern Europe during the time of communism, they were very primitive. But the Chinese are extremely and unimaginably advanced when it comes to the technology. Anyhow, so when we entered in this vocational training center, they have some boys and girls who are trained to be presented to foreign journalists like us, and to show to and to deceive the outside world that these vocational training centers are not prisons but are schools. Now, the Chinese, when they detain the Uyghurs, because in Xinjiang, if you live now in Xinjiang and you express to your friend the idea that you are not a Han Chinese, but you are a Turkic Muslim, if you tell to anybody that you believe in Allah and you are skeptic about Communist Party of China, if authorities see you reading Quran with friends, or if they see you praying in your home or wherever, they immediately consider you to be an extremist, a danger for the society, and they will immediately grab you and send you to these concentration camps.
Wait, so hold on. They're saying these vocational training camps are to deal with extremists, but you said when you got there they had a bunch of children singing?
Wait, yeah, yes. Boys and girls. How old were
they? Yes, boys and girls. Yeah, I'll come into that. Uh-huh. So, I mean, when they sent us there, we were faced with these trained boys and girls who are presented to BBC. They are the same faces. If you go into the videos of Sky News and BBC, you'll see probably the same faces that I filmed with my phone. So we face these boys and girls, and what they do in this concentration camps, they do a number of things. Number one, they are isolated and detained for 1 to 2 years. They are not allowed to have contacts with their families. I mean, they are prisoners. Okay? So number one, these people, they are isolated from the outside world. Number two, these people are sent into a prison-like cells where they live like 10 people in a room. They have no privacy. Even when they go to the washroom, they have no privacy. And they live the life of a prisoner. But what the Chinese do with these people? Because the Chinese do not consider the so-called extremists as radicals or terrorists, because they have some kind of degrees. So if you have personal beliefs in Allah and in Islam, you are not a terrorist. For them, you are an extremist. Because if you do something against Chinese authority, let us say you slap a police or you insult Xi Jinping, then they consider you a terrorist, they send you to jail, or they kill you. But if you have the slightest belief in your identity and religion, they consider you extremist. And they send you into these camps, and in these camps, you are forced to 24 hours a day speak Chinese, to not ever think of believing in your God. They prohibit you. If you show the slightest sign of being religious, they punish you, they put you into solitary confinement, etc. They teach you Chinese law, Chinese constitution. You have to perfect your Mandarin in order to hope that maybe after 1, 2, 4 years, whatever, you can be released and join your family. They also give skills to these people, and some of them probably are being used even to do forced labor. So they give you a skill, they make you a plumber, they make you a baker, whatever, because the plan of the Chinese with the Uyghurs is, number one, to assimilate them, to turn them into Han Chinese who speak perfectly Mandarin. And number three, which is very important, is that when these people are released from these concentration camps, after 2 years or whatever, they will serve as workers for the ruling Han Chinese colonies. Because the Han Chinese, what we understood from our visit, they do all government jobs. They work in the army, in the ministries, in state institutions. The government builds for them very nice apartments, while the Uyghurs live a very poor life, but they are trained to be plumbers and construction workers who speak perfect Chinese, who worship the ruling Han Chinese elite, and who will construct, clean, and do services to the ruling elites. So if I may come back my experience when we visited Aksu concentration camp, once we entered in this camp, the Chinese told us that this is a school where we are bringing Islamic extremists and we are turning them into good citizens. So once we entered there, the Chinese presented us with a number of boys and girls who were dancing and singing in Chinese. The aim of our Chinese host was that we had to stay and film for 1 hour these people, how they sing and dance. But after seeing like 10 minutes songs and dancings, I told to our Chinese friends, I want to interview these people. And they didn't like it. So what I did is that I left the room with my phone in the hand and I started to film around and I wanted to interview some other Uyghur boys who were in a field and they were playing basketball. The Chinese didn't let us to interview them. They got very worried that we didn't follow their plan. But then what happened, if you have seen my videos, these people that were selected by the communist apparatchiks as the good Uyghurs, and I started to interview these people, who they were and what were their crimes. First of all, I started by telling them Salam Alaikum, which means peace be with you, which is in Arabic and Turkic. And to our surprise, nobody dared to respond to us with Walaikum Salam, but they were telling us Ni hao. So me and the Turkish friend that was with me, we understood that these people, they have a big problem. Then we started to speak to them in their own language, which is Turkish. So we told them Nasılsın, Ben Olsi, Arnaut Lugda, and so forth. So how are you? I'm Olsi, I'm from Albania. They were understanding us, but they were not responding to us in their language. So we understood that they were totally prohibited even to speak their own language inside concentration camps. And then I started to interview these people and asking them why you are here, what is your crime? Because the Chinese told us that these are Islamist extremists, radicals, so we were expecting to find suicide bombers, terrorist killers, and to see how China is dealing with it. But when I started to interview these people and I asked them what is their crime, they were telling to me, somebody told me that I wrote that a true Muslim should pray to God 5 times per day. Another one had prayed to God in a street. Another one had read Quran. Another one had married in front of an imam, which is a crime to marry according to religion in China. Another one had told to his mother to pray to God. And when we heard these answers, we were really shocked. And I asked our Chinese translators, and I told them, sir, we were expecting to find terrorists and suicide bombers in here, but these people, they have made no crime. These people are simple people who believe that they are Uyghurs, who believe that they are Muslims, who practice their religion, and why you have brought these people here? The answer from the Chinese officials was that they had done a crime. I told them, but what crime have they done? Is it a crime to pray to your God? Is it a crime to read the Quran? And they told us yes.
Oh my gosh.
And what we understood, which I mentioned in my article that I published in Daily Sabah in Turkey 2 days ago, with the title, What Can the Muslim World Do to Save the Uyghurs and Islam? After returning from I started to read the laws of Xinjiang, and particularly, they have a law called the De-Extremification Regulation. And according to this law, which is specific about Xinjiang only, in Xinjiang, it is a crime to believe in Islam, It is a crime to practice religion. It is a crime to read the Quran. If you want to read the Quran, you should go to officially designated imam and he should read it for you, because you are, if you read it, Quran is a dangerous book and you suddenly can become a terrorist and kill people, according to the Chinese. It is a crime to tell to your kid that you are a Muslim. It is a crime to tell to your kid that there is a God. It is a crime to tell to your kid until he becomes 18 years old that we are Muslims and we believe in Allah. It is a crime to eat kosher or halal food, like we Muslims call it, and to believe in the concept of kosher or halal. It is a crime to bury your dead people according to your religious practice. It is a crime to marry according to the religion. It is a crime to possess Islamic books or other religious books. So in few words, the Chinese authorities have declared Islam a terrorist ideology, extremist ideology. And whoever dares to think, speak, practice about it, he is considered to be an extremist.
Well, so it sounds like this propaganda tour they put you through really backfired for them.
It did backfire for a number of reasons. Number one, you have to take a great courage to do what I have done, because you, after that, you'll become an enemy of China. And probably, you know, today many Chinese medias have attacked me personally for my videos.
I saw you were just attacked by the Global Times. Congratulations.
Thank you. Global Times and other and many other medias. But, I mean, they attacked me, but now I am the enemy of the second superpower of this planet. So it is not very, very good news after that, because especially in countries like Albania, where I am, the Chinese have a great influence and they can make life horrible for people like me. So number one, talking like I'm talking, it takes a great courage to break the silence. Because when we were in Xinjiang, we had journalists from Saudi Arabia, from United Arab Emirates, who saw with their own eyes what the Chinese were doing, because it's a crime even for a lady to put a headscarf, a hijab. So we had two ladies, one from Saudi Arabia and one from United Arab Emirates. And they were crying when we were interviewing these girls, because there were some girls who were sent to these concentration camps only for wearing a hijab. And I asked these Saudi and Emirati girls, I told them, sisters, if you are to live here, you would end up in concentration camps like them. And they were crying. And I told them, are you going to write about this when you go back to Saudi Arabia or UAE? They told me no. I told them why? Because they told us our government do not let us. So for people to speak against the Chinese, first of all, they need to come from anarchic, liberal, democratic countries like Albania is. Because if I were to be from Mongolia, Kazakhstan, Saudi Arabia, I would have not spoken like this, because I would have ended up in prison. And second, it takes a great courage to understand that by speaking this, you'll be attacked by the Chinese. And the third is, you have to be Muslim, you know, because, I mean, I saw some people who were in our delegations who were not Muslims, who were coming from Russia and what have you. And, I mean, they didn't have the same empathy people. I mean, when I interviewed these boys and girls, me and my Turkic friends, we had even some Indians who were Hindu journalists, by the way. We all felt like crying. I mean, we were shaking. We had two Indian journalists who came from India. They told me, in India, we have this fascist BJP ruling party. But, I mean, we never have such things in India. I mean, even from the most extreme Hindu fundamentalists, You never see such things that we saw in China.
Wow, it sounds like the Chinese Communist Party are the real extremists.
I told them, you are worse than the Taliban, I told them, because wow. if ISIS, and they were taking note of everything that I'm selling, by the way, and they're lying when they're telling to me in their article that they made today against me that when I was there, I behaved myself and I was very happy. They are lying. They have everything on record on what I told them. I told them, you are atheist Talibans. I told them, if ISIS, Al-Qaeda, what have you, they force people to become Muslims, you are forcing people to become Han, Chinese atheists, and this is crazy what you are doing to them. I told them, you live in the 21st century. You cannot do such things in this century.
I'm curious, Osi, like how old were the kids that you were talking to? When you say boys and girls, how old are they? And then what did they say? Because there's a narrative, right, that they have to say that, you know, they were put in prison for or put in these camps for doing things like wearing a hijab. But now that they've been here, they understand, like, you know, why that was wrong, right? Like, what did they say about that?
The people that we interviewed in Aksu, they were quite young. They were in their 20s. But when we went to Kashgar concentration camp, the people that we interviewed there, they were in their 30s, 40s, maybe even 50s. Now, during the interviews that I had with these people, they told me that, because when I was asking them, what is your crime? And they were telling to me, okay, 1 year ago, I prayed to God. 1 year ago, I married according to the Quran. 1 year ago, I told to my mother to pray. So when they were confessing me their crimes, they were telling to me that 1 or 2 or 4 years ago, because there was a guy there who was since 4 years, wow, they had believed in God. And when I asked them, are you Muslims now? Why don't you give me back alaikum salam when I salam alaikum? They told me we're not Muslims. And this shocked everybody. And I told them, how come you're not Muslims? You are here because you believed in God 1 year ago. And they were looking at their Chinese guards to make sure that they were giving to us the right answer. And they told me, yes, but we were wrong to believe in God. Now we don't believe in God anymore. And I told them, okay, but what do you believe in? They told me, we believe in science and in the Communist Party of China. And I told,
nice.
Yes. And I told to one of these girls whom I interviewed, she had a hijab 1 year ago, and she had married her husband according to the religious practice. And this girl who had hijab 1 year ago, now she told me that she didn't believe in Allah anymore. And by the way, they are not allowed to practice their religion there. And I told them, what is your dream for the future? She said, my dream is to graduate from this vocational training center and after that to find a job. I told her, okay, after you graduate from here, if a Muslim, Arab Muslim will come and ask you to marry and to Iran or Saudi Arabia where women have to keep hijab, are you going to marry him? She told me no. And I told her why, because she told me I don't believe anymore. These people were so much horrified and forced to denounce their religion and identity that the only example that I found, I've seen in my life, is the novel of George Orwell, 1984. So what the Chinese are doing with these people is not only that they are imprisoning them, is not only that they are torturing them, is not only that they are separating these people from their families and destroying their families, but moreover, they are psychologically destroying these people. And for people who have seen the movie or have read the novel of 1984, these people are mentally destroyed so that when they come out of these concentration camps, they are no longer normal human beings. They are people who have been psychologically tortured. And as I've mentioned in another interview that I gave after coming out of Xinjiang, what the Chinese are doing with these people is they are not killing their bodies, but they're killing their souls. And like Jesus says in the Bible, you should be afraid from these people who kill your soul and not that kill your bodies. What the Chinese are doing, they're destroying their personalities. They are turning them into robots, into slaves, who would serve to the Han Chinese Empire and Chinese imperialism. And the greatest tragedy that these people have is that because they are not Han Chinese, but because they are Turkic Muslims, and because they live in Xinjiang, And Xinjiang is the major power hub through which China is exporting its economic socialist imperialism towards Central Asia and Africa. China wants to destroy these people and to turn them forcefully into Han Chinese. We had such kind of examples with Hitler, what he did with the Jews, but Hitler, he was killing them. We had in Canada these schools of the natives when missionaries were taking Aboriginal Indians and forcing them to become Christians. But what we have seen in the past, this was in a very small scale when it comes to Canada and some, imperialist historical projects that they did in the past. But what the Chinese are doing now with the Uyghurs, it is an industrial scale, the destruction of a nation and of a religious group, because the Chinese fear that if the Uyghurs are left free with their own ethnic and Islamic identity, they can become a major headache for China, and then Turkestan can become the China's Afghanistan, which will destroy its imperialist dream of economically invading Central Asia, Africa, and maybe even Europe.
Because the Chinese Communist Party is using Xinjiang as sort of a transition for its Belt and Road, sort of these trade corridors and...
Yes, okay. And all the roads that go into Pakistan, into Mongolia, into Russia, into Afghanistan, they all pass through Xinjiang. And wherever we were going, in state museums, in presentations, the Chinese were showing us the Silk Road, and they were telling to us, look, Xinjiang is our heart. So if these Turkic Muslim people are allowed to stay there, and in one moment they simply want to create their own, this will be the death of the Chinese imperialism.
Hmm. Now, you kind of touched on this earlier, but I'm curious. As far as other countries talking about the situation in Xinjiang, like surprisingly, you hear a lot from the Trump administration, but almost nothing from other Muslim countries. Why is that?
We have Turkey who is speaking about it, but Turkey cannot do much. For many reasons, Turkey is not a superpower. Turkey sits too far from China to do anything. And Turkey needs Chinese investments, but Turkey is speaking about it. Then you have Pakistan, which knows very well what is going on. But because Pakistan has its regional war with India, it needs China to support it militarily. And it is such a great irony that we hear about the Kashmiris, how India is oppressing them. And China talks about Kashmir as well. But then when it comes from the Pakistani and even Indian side, we hear nothing of Turkestan. In my opinion, the tragedy of Eastern Turkestan is worse than the tragedy of Muslims in Kashmir. And then when it comes to many Arab dictators, starting from Saudi Arabia, Algeria, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain. They don't speak about it for a simple reason, because the Chinese are the best supporters of the dictators throughout the world. The Chinese are not like, let us say, Americans who speak about democracy, human rights, what have you. In China, you don't have radios or programs like yours that is critical of what is going on in China. So, for the Arab dictators, China is a blessing, because China gives them money when they need, gives them weapons, gives them high-tech technology, doesn't speak a word about the crimes that these Arabic dictatorships do against their own people. And this is the reason, because in the Muslim countries, we don't have democracy. We have democracies in Indonesia, in Malaysia, in Turkey. So in these countries, we hear about Uyghurs, but when it comes to Arab countries, you don't have freedom of speech there. People do not dare to speak about the rights of their own people, of their own women. And can you imagine how can they speak about what is going on in Xinjiang? It's unimaginable.
Now, would you say that the work that the Communist Party is doing to remove Islam from Xinjiang is working? Is it effective?
It is effective. they have managed to intimidate and scare the Uyghurs. When we were in Xinjiang, we saw an unimaginable climate of fear. The Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims, they were afraid to talk to us when they were seeing us that we were foreigners, because even the Chinese were sending them away. And I think that the greatest problem that Xinjiang has now is not the concentration camps, because in concentration camps you can have around 1 million people. The greatest problem that Xinjiang is suffering now is, number one, massive Han colonization. And the Chinese are sending the Hans in each and every city and town. And number two is something that was told to me by the Chinese officials when I was there. For you to come from a village somewhere in the central China and to have a nice government job in Xinjiang, to have a new apartment, to have a car, etc., the Communist Party expects you to work for the government of Beijing as a soldier, as a spy, in order to oppress the Uyghurs. So some people told me when I was there, they told me, oh, see, life is horrible for us here. I told them why. They told me to spend 1 month in a year living in Uyghurs' homes. So the Communist Party has forced all the Uyghurs to accept in their homes Han Chinese. So let us say if you are married with your wife and kids and you have, let us say, one bedroom, you should bring in your home a Han Chinese who should live with you and your wife, see what you do with her, and spy on Communist Party officials for what you are doing at your home. Because they want to make sure that, number one, you are not practicing Muslim, and number two, the duty of this Chinese official is to teach you Mandarin and to teach you Chinese law. So the issue of the concentration camps is only a part of the problem, because in a way the government of Beijing is treating all the Uyghur and Muslim population there as prisoners, as people who have to, in an industrial scale, be assimilated and turned into Han Chinese.
So did you talk to some of these Han Chinese who were living in Muslim homes?
Yes, I just mentioned. I spoke to some people who were with us. I don't want to reveal their names because they can lose their head. And they told me, people live, they told me. They told me we have to leave our homes every year for 1 month. And sometimes when we go to these Uyghur homes, they don't have even beds. So we have to sleep in the ground and to eat with them, because they are sent to some very poor villages sometimes. And they were not happy about it.
So they're the ones who are saying that their lives are very difficult because of
this. Yes, yes, yes. The Han Chinese told me.
Did you get a sense from anybody you talked to that they didn't like what was happening to the Uyghurs? I mean, Han Chinese people.
We were very much isolated, and we were all the time watched and monitored. And moreover, after we visited the Wenxi County Vocational Training Center, or the Aksu concentration camp, and I interrogated the prisoners in the way how I did it, and then I put my videos on YouTube, the Han Chinese became very suspicious of me. They were monitoring me all the time. They were not letting us to talk to anyone, so we had to talk only to ourselves. And even when I was going in the washroom, I always had two people standing in the front of the door of my washroom. So we were under total control. We were not allowed to talk to anybody. And even of the officials who were with us, it seems they got orders from Beijing that we are not really very friendly with what we were seeing. And the Chinese got very crazy with all of us. And by the way, one day before left Kashgar, we had one top Communist Party officials from the Xinjiang Information Office. His name was Mr. Li. He even threatened all the journalists. He told to us that here in Xinjiang you have seen good and bad things, but we do not want you, when you go out of China, to report something negative, because that will be unacceptable from us. And of course we told them, okay, don't worry, we love you.
Did you say you uploaded your videos to YouTube while you were still in Xinjiang?
Yes. As soon as I came from the Wenxi County, because I understood what kind of a treasure I had in my hand, as soon as I went to the hotel by using a proxy, because in China you cannot access YouTube and Google and what have you. They have their own. I mean, when you are in China, you are in another planet. They have their own internet. They're totally isolated. But anyhow, before going to China, I learned how to break the firewall. So as soon as I came from the Wenxi County Vocational Training Center and I had the videos that I had, I uploaded them on YouTube because I was afraid that the Chinese would probably confiscate my phone and delete the videos.
That was smart.
Yeah, it was smart, but it was even dangerous because as soon as I put these videos online,
oh yeah,
I was bombarded by hundreds of people, Uyghurs, I mean, people from the places that I never imagined they would contact me. And we were contacted even from Turkey, and some people told us you are in a big danger. The Chinese can imprison you for what you are doing. So, I mean, we understood the situation, and our visit at the Wenxi County Vocational Training Center was the breaking point. I mean, everybody, without exception, the Bangladeshis, the Pakistanis, the Afghans, all the journalists who were with us, even though many of them have not spoken because they can lose their jobs or sometimes even their heads in their countries, everybody understood what was going on. We had even a debate as journalists among ourselves, and we asked them, are you going to report? And some people said they don't let us. Another guy who was from a country friendly with China, he told us, yeah, we know what is going on, but this is their internal affair. I told to this guy, okay, it is their internal affair, but how can you, by seeing what they are doing to their own people, I mean, this is a crime, because after all, we are Muslims, and imagine what if they would do the same thing to us. I mean, and do you have some kind of humanity? I talked to these people. Don't you see what these people are doing with them?
So would you say your trip to Xinjiang changed you in any way?
It changed me. And since when I came back from Xinjiang in August, because before that I visited Palestine and Israel. And when I went to Ramallah and West Bank, I went crazy with the Israeli occupation of Palestine. And I thought this is the worst country in the planet. But after coming back from China, I went even more crazy. And now Israel and Palestine looks like a joke for me. I mean, when I think about it.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know how these Uyghurs can live in such a totalitarian dictatorship. You know, because, I mean, in history, we have countries invading countries. Israel invades Palestine. They take your land, whatever. But this is only a physical conflict. But in Xinjiang, we saw a psychological conflict. We saw a mass surveilling state that does not let you free even when you are with your wife, that doesn't let you even to read what you want to read. I mean, it doesn't let you even to pray to your God. I mean, it is such an extremely totalitarian dictatorship that I don't think and I don't believe that it can exist in any country of the world. When I saw what the Chinese were doing with the Uyghurs, I told them, okay, I understand that you are afraid that the Americans might use the Uyghurs against you, blah, blah, blah. But what you are doing is unimaginable because, number one, you are mass radicalizing these people. And I told them, remember my words, maybe maximum in 10 years, a foreign power is going to come, is going to arm these people, and these people are going to burn China. Number two, I told them, okay, I understand you want to squash ethnic separatism of the Uyghurs. But I told them, why don't you follow Vladimir Putin's example with Chechnya, who created a Muslim republic, gave them religious freedom, but told them, please don't fight against me. But I told them, what you are doing is crazy, and you do not understand what you are doing to yourself. The problem with the Chinese is that they are very arrogant. They do not have the senses of freedoms that we have in the West. They do not have respect. And moreover, because they are very rich and they are technologically very superior, they think that they are very strong. And I think this is their mistake. Hmm. But coming back to the question that the lady made to me, if they are succeeding, I think, yes, for the time being, they're succeeding. They have broken and destroyed the Uyghurs totally. They have penetrated every place and every hole in the Uyghur society, and the Uyghurs live under a horrible fear. If the Chinese will continue what they are doing for the coming 10 years, maybe they will totally destroy and dismantle the Uyghur nation. And maybe after 20 years, we'll speak of these people like one extinct group which existed a few decades ago.
It's interesting to me that you mention that the Chinese don't see the danger in this, because I wonder if part of it is that the Chinese Communist Party already did this to the Han Chinese under Mao. After the Tiananmen Square massacre, they did it to groups within China like the Falun Gong, who are religious but Han Chinese. They did it to the Tibetans, and it was all kind of successful.
Yes, they feel that they are too strong, and moreover, they are too arrogant, because when we had these historical discussions in Urumqi with these communist historians, and I suggested to them that they should be more forgiving, more open to diversity towards Islam and Uyghurs. They didn't even like that we were doing them the questions. So, I mean, they were behaving in a kind of arrogance that you could expect only from Nazi officials in time of Hitler. So, I mean, they didn't have the openness that we have in the West and the desire to listen to the other and to try to understand that maybe the other is right about what he's saying. They had set up their mind, so they were... I mean, I haven't seen more stubborn people than them. They were, and the problem is that they are so many. They are 1 billion and something, whatever. So, I mean, 14 million Muslims, Uyghurs, they are nothing for them.
So it doesn't sound like your friends in the Chinese Communist Party are very happy with you. What's been sort of the blowback?
Well, the blowback has been in many dimensions. Had a discussion with some Chinese officials here who they told me, please, if you can, now that you came back from China, don't talk about what you saw. And I told them I have nothing against China, and I think that socialism is a better system than capitalism. But I told them, for what I saw in Xinjiang, I have to let the world know. And moreover, as we mentioned before, today, a number of Chinese media outlets, like Globe and the Mail, they have attacked me personally and in name, and they're telling to the world that I lied about the situation in Xinjiang.
So you said the Global Times, you mean the Chinese state-run media Global Times that attacked you?
Global Times, but even some other outlets in Chinese, they attacked me. And I wrote to their Twitter account, and I'd like to say it even here, and I presume that your program will be heard by a number of communist officials in Beijing.
I can only hope.
Yeah, and I'd like to tell to our Chinese friends that if I'm lying, please come and let's have a debate and prove to the world that I'm lying. I'm open with my patients, with my testimonies. I can bring even other journalists on board, and we will show to the world what is going on. I beg our Chinese friends back in Xinjiang and in Beijing that if I'm lying, come and face me in a debate and prove to the world that I'm a liar about what I'm saying. I have video recordings which show to the whole world what you are doing in this concentration camps, how you are treating the Uyghurs. You have your own white papers, you have your own extremification regulations and what have you. And let us have an open and democratic debate. And if I'm a liar, let me be a liar in the front of the public. I'm ready for the challenge. Are the Chinese ready for that?
Well, have they responded to you?
No. I wrote to the Twitter account of Globe and Mail, I mean, Global Times, what is it called? I forgot. And they didn't respond. I think they even removed my Twitter comments.
Well, That's too bad. That's a debate I would love to listen to.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about what you saw in Xinjiang. We'll definitely put links to the videos you took in the description. But for anyone else who wants to know more about you or what you do, do you have like a website or a Twitter handle that they can follow you at?
Yes, I'm on Twitter. They can Google me, Orsi Azeji. I'm on Facebook as well. They can find me online just to Google me. I'm becoming very famous.
All right. Yeah, and in the best possible way. Yep. Yeah, so we'll also include your Twitter handle below.
All right, then.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to join us. This was, as many of our interviews are, absolutely horrifying.
Yes, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Wow, that was horrible. I need comfort with my warm cup of tea.
I mean, it's a you can tell this was a visceral experience for him.
Yeah.
This is the first person we've talked to who's actually been inside
the training camps.
The camps. The
concentration camps.
Yeah, so. And it turned somebody who was skeptical of the Western narrative.
Because China was a Marxist socialist equal worker society or something.
I mean, it turns out that on one hand, the Chinese Communist Party, they're like the worst Marxists. And on the other hand, they're also worse than the Taliban.
Oh.
And they're also worse than all the, you know, foreign, like, British imperialists.
I thought you were going to say they're the worst Marxists, but they're also the best Marxists. Like, I thought you were going there about the state control. And
that's actually true. They are the best Marxists in the sense of...
I suppose they're the best Marxist-Leninists.
Yes.
With Xi Jinping thought, with Chinese characteristics.
We forgot the socialism part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gosh, yeah, they were compared to today the Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, Slobodan Milosevic. Gosh, who else?
The Taliban.
The Taliban. ISIS.
Under whatever his last name was, who ruled Albania under communist regime. Although he was apparently primitive compared to the totalitarian state that is modern day China.
Lovely. Hey, so everyone listening, let us know what you think about this in the comments below. Leave a nice review for us on iTunes or the whatever Apple podcast stuff.
Yeah, I'd be interested in hearing what people, if there was something in the interview that surprised people.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, this is, I recommend listening to our podcast with a cup of tea as a source of comfort. Again, that's go.pathofcha.com/unscripted. Hey, Shelly, I see you're laughing, but this is how we support this show so we can keep doing
true.
It.
That's true. Yes.
So I don't feel too much of a sellout. And it's good tea. And thanks for listening. Once again, I'm Chris Chappell.
I'm Shelly John.
And I'm Matt Gnezda.
Talk to you next time.